Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez, and this is On Point. A high-stakes meeting at the White House yesterday had the makings of a Wild West-style showdown. President Trump standing off against embattled Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and FBI Director Christopher Wray. Coming just 24 hours after Trump's weekend tweet storm, demanding the Department of Justice look into whether the FBI and the Department of Justice spied on his campaign. It's all raising big ethical questions about the rule of law, obstruction of justice. This hour on Point, we'll dig into the evidence behind Trump's demand for a DOJ investigation. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of President Trump's accusations? Is this the latest stop on the road to something more serious, like a constitutional crisis? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we'll discuss Europe's response to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's hardline speech or his concessions on Iran yesterday. But first, Trump versus the Department of Justice. Joining me now from Washington is Matt Zapatosky, national security reporter for The Washington Post, who covers the Justice Department. You can find a link to his latest piece, headlined GOP Lawmakers to Review Classified Information on FBI Source, at our website, onpointradio.org. Matt Zapatosky, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Is it in any way new that a man who had contact with campaign officials also had contact with the FBI? We've known that for a while, haven't we?
Well, I think it is somewhat new. We didn't know about this guy's role in particular, and the FBI has sought to keep this guy's role and his name and all sorts of information about him out of the public view. They view him as a sensitive, confidential source, and they wanted to keep information about him from becoming public. It's true that we knew the FBI had been interviewing people on the campaign, connected to the campaign. So in that way, it's not new. But this guy is particularly interesting. He's the subject, too, of this great fight between Congress and the Justice Department over what the department should reveal about him. So that is new as well. I think this is definitely something people should pay attention to, though it's probably a fair point that the FBI's use of him is not all that surprising.
What do we know about Stephen Halper that helps, well, color in the picture, his backstory?
Well, he's sort of a longtime Republican political guy, operative. He's a former Cambridge University professor. The FBI in this case, well, we don't know exactly how the FBI used Mr. Halper in this case, but we know that Mr. Halper interacted with several Trump campaign aides, Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, Sam Clovis, just kind of brushed up against them, wanted to chat with them about various foreign policy issues. Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, of course, were foreign policy advisors to President Trump. And we know that the FBI kind of considered Mr. Halper a confidential informant in its Russia investigation. In other words, this guy sort of on the sly would give them information about what he was hearing. It's very common for the FBI to use informants like this. It's in some ways a less invasive step than a search warrant or a wiretap. They get somebody who they know is kind of connected to these circles and then ask him what he's hearing to sort of help advance their investigation.
Stephen Halper was in touch with former GOP administration officials earlier in his life. He had led seminars for senior intelligence officials at Cambridge University. But the president has construed this as an infiltration, as a piece of surveillance for political purposes. Is he onto something?
From what we know so far, infiltrated is probably too strong a word. This guy had, at least from what has been described to us so far, pretty, I don't know if you would call him routine, but pretty basic surface level contacts with these campaign advisors that I just described. This was not as if the FBI was running Trump's campaign manager as an informant, you know. This was a guy who brushed up against Trump campaign advisors and apparently in at least some instances reported back to the FBI about his dealings. It's a very common practice that the FBI uses, and I do think infiltrated or embedded is a little bit of an overstatement of his role.
But does the president's reaction, serve the purposes of fleshing out just who this person was, what he did, and how his information was being used by the FBI?
So look, the president's reaction and conservative lawmakers' reaction have certainly caused quite a stir, and they've caused a lot of information to become public about this guy. And I'm sure some conservative lawmakers and the president see that as a win. You know, even though this is probably a pretty common practice that the FBI uses, some conservatives don't see it that way. They see it as this guy being a spy against the Trump campaign, and they see that as undermining the credibility of what is now Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. So in some ways, it doesn't sort of matter precisely what he did in the mind of conservatives and the president. They like the attention this guy is getting as it helps sort of raise questions about Robert Mueller's probe.
That's Matt Zapatosky, national security reporter for The Washington Post. Joining me now, also from Washington, Philip Mudd, a former top intelligence official during both the Bush and Obama administrations. From 2005 to 2010, he served as the deputy director of the FBI's National Security Branch and a senior intelligence advisor. He's also the former deputy director of the CIA's Counterterrorism Center. Philip Mudd, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me. That sounds better when you speak it than when I lived it. So I'm glad it's in the background.
Well, let's talk a little bit about process, about mechanics, about what the done thing is. Is it not law but custom to observe the independence of the Justice Department for senior members of the executive branch?
It is, and there's a suggestion during the current controversy this week that somehow the Obama administration would have directed that a human informant be placed in an investigation. I never saw that happen. I never saw a political official direct the FBI or even have a conversation with the FBI that suggested the White House would have a role in saying how an informant would be inserted into an investigation. So that part of it to me is not only surprising, it just violates the practices that I witnessed at the FBI.
Is the president within his rights as the leader of the executive branch to ask his inspector general to look into how the FBI used Stefan Halper?
But you would have to ask somebody who's an expert on the law. I got to tell you, as a practitioner, it makes me uncomfortable. Remember, we started part of this conversation about the president and his involvement with the Department of Justice when he alleged that the United States government and the FBI had wiretapped Trump Tower. And you had to have, in a public hearing, the FBI director say that was false. So, if you looked at this as a legitimate question by the president that something wrong had happened, you might say, okay, it's fair for the inspector general to look at it. It looks to me like the president is using this as a way to continually say this investigation is a witch hunt. And if we get results of the investigation that lead to further indictments, I'm afraid the president's going to say they're fraudulent and I should pardon whoever else is indicted.
But this is a kind of confirmation, isn't it, that the Trump team's suspicions that they were being investigated by some other branch of government might actually bear some resemblance to reality, no?
Now, let's make this a little simpler. If you're the mayor of a small town and you're investigated for political corruption for directing contracts, do you have the right to say, I don't believe this investigation is legitimate and I'm going to undercut it? And I'd say also, if you're going to run an investigation, especially an investigation that's what we call predicated, in other words, you have evidence already from evidently an Australian diplomat that something wrong happened, that people involved in the Trump campaign had foreknowledge of WikiLeaks access to stolen information. Typically, in an investigation, you had two avenues. One is wires, that is listening to someone's phone or tapping their email, and the second is informants, listening to what they say in meetings. It's not like the FBI put people into the campaign and said, we want to understand the plans and intentions of a political campaign related to Hillary Clinton. It was simply to say, is the information we gathered that suggests there might have been wrongdoing accurate or not? That is standard operating procedure for any security service since the beginning of time.
Well, along with the internal and legal and mechanical operations of government, there's the public, visible signs of the sort of soft power of government. And Rudolph Giuliani, I guess, is part of that now as a spokesman for the Trump team, going on national television and saying things of this sort. He was asked about the president's charges of infiltration and responded, I don't know for sure, nor does the president, if there really was one. For a long time, we've been told there was some sort of infiltration. At one time, the president thought it was a wiretap. Does this clarify or just continue to muddy the waters?
I think it muddies it because Mr. Giuliani is a smart man, Mayor Giuliani. The use of language here, the use of words like infiltration and spy, to my mind, are way too aggressive. They're trying to suggest to the American people that the very executive branch that's managed by the President of the United States is actually undermining the security of Americans by spying on a political campaign, when in fact all you have is an informant sitting around talking to three people about whether there was illegitimate or trying to determine whether there was illegitimate contact with foreign powers that violates federal law. That is not an infiltration of a political campaign for political purposes. It's a legitimate effort to understand whether criminal law was broken. I was taught that we're all created equal under the law, and I think what Giuliani and the president are trying to say is, unless you're the president, and then you're not equal.
Philip Mudd is with me, along with Matt Zapatosky. Joining us on Twitter, Airbag writes, please take this into account. Trump knew the campaign was being investigated long before now. He's making a big deal at this moment as a distraction. Karen writes, Trump is pro-law enforcement, except when it comes to him and his swamp. Plains Dealer writes, it's all a sick game. He could declassify and make public the information he claims is being hidden, but instead is orchestrating the circumstances for political gain and to manipulate his base. We're discussing President Trump's demand that the Department of Justice look into whether the FBI spied on the Trump campaign, and you can join the conversation. Is this more than just political theater, a way to deflect from the Mueller investigation? I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
On Bullseye, I talk with people who make amazing work. Greta Gerwig, Errol Morris, A$AP Ferg. The conversations are real and funny, and they take you somewhere unexpected. Find Bullseye with Jesse Thorne on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're talking about President Trump's standoff with the FBI and the Department of Justice over confidential sources and allegations of spying into the Trump campaign. You can join the conversation. Is there fire behind all the smoke? Are the facts and the law with President Trump? Or is this just a pound the table and yell strategy? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking with Washington Post National Security and Justice Department reporter Matt Zapatosky and former top FBI official Philip Mudd. Joining me now from Philadelphia is Claire Finkelstein. She teaches law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania Law School and is the director of the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law. Claire, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
I want you to listen to this. During a wide-ranging half-hour interview with Fox and Friends last month, President Trump railed against the FBI and the Department of Justice.
You look at the corruption at the top of the FBI, it's a disgrace. And our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point I won't. Our okay. Justice Department should be looking at that kind of stuff, not the nonsense of collusion with right. Russia. There is no collusion with me right. and Russia.
Professor, there is a confusing pattern of cans and shoulds and musts. But can the president ask his Department of Justice to investigate his FBI?
There are a lot of powers that the president has, which, if he misuses them for his own personal purposes, would constitute obstruction of justice. And this happens to be one of them. So ordering an investigation into those who are investigating you as president is a misuse of the power. In addition, it's not appropriate for the president to be directing in minute details what the Justice Department is doing. Broad policy conversations with the head of the Justice Department, policies and principles would be one thing, but directing particular investigations would be another and would violate the basic principles of independence of the Justice Department that helps to secure the rule of law.
It seems to me that this is something bracketed by both what the law says in specifics and by custom. But if the president really believed that the FBI had penetrated his campaign for nefarious purposes, what would be, you know, given the fact that he is being investigated by elements of this same FBI, what tools would be at his disposal?
Well, let's clarify what's meant by nefarious purposes. What's meant here is political purposes. So the accusation is that the Justice Department behaved improperly, the FBI behaved improperly, by sending an informant into his campaign to function as a spy, and that the reason for doing this was not based on legitimate legal cause. The president doesn't need to counter that at this stage if he, in fact, believes that that's the case, because it will be apparent when the Mueller investigation is completed whether or not there was cause for the FBI, in fact, to be investigating his campaign. Now, all evidence currently suggests that there was, because Carter Page, of course, had been investigated for a long time, and George Papadopoulos, who was one of the other people who this informant was speaking with, has in fact pleaded guilty already to something, namely lying to the FBI. But very likely that was an accommodation and a fairly light plea deal because Robert Mueller had other things on him. So there's in fact all too much reason to think that the FBI investigation of the Trump campaign was a reasonable thing for the FBI to be doing at that point.
And just in case you listening to this program thought this just isn't complicated enough, there comes, of course, a report from another front in this standoff, and that is the Congress. Top officials at the FBI and Justice Department have agreed to review highly classified information with lawmakers who have been seeking such information on the handling of the Russia investigation. The agreement, announced yesterday by the White House, followed President Donald Trump's extraordinary demand that the Justice Department investigate whether the FBI infiltrated his campaign. It remains unclear exactly what the lawmakers will be allowed to review or if the Justice Department will be providing any documents to Congress. White House Chief of Staff Kelly will broker the meeting between congressional leaders and the FBI, Justice Department, and Officer of the Director of National Intelligence. Matt Zapatosky, is this standard operating procedure, or are we breaking different kinds of new ground in this case?
Well, I think we're breaking some new ground, and I say that because, well, for a few reasons. One, the White House's involvement here is a little bit weird. What Congress is seeking is documents on the investigation of the Trump campaign, and here you're going to have President Trump's chief of staff apparently sitting in on a meeting where documents about this investigation are going to be discussed. I don't know if they're going to be turned over, but information about that investigation is going to be discussed. That's kind of weird in its own right. The Justice Department has fought very vigorously against turning over documents to Congress on the origin of the investigation and on this confidential source in particular. It's not totally weird that the president would sort of come down with Congress and say, hey, they have an oversight function here. You, the Justice Department, have to give up materials to them. But it is weird because the materials are about an ongoing criminal investigation. It's highly unusual for the department to turn over materials like that to Congress, and especially in light of the fact that the investigation has to do with the president and the president is ordering the Justice Department to turn over these materials. It's just kind of a mess.
And Philip Mudd, these people are, let's be clear, from different realms of our public life. If you are investigating a crime and generating information that aids in such investigation, you're a different kind of official from someone who is an elected official with political interests at stake, aren't you?
Sure, but let's be clear about what's going on here. The Congress has the right to ask the executive branch to conduct investigations for oversight, that is, to determine whether the executive branch is doing things that the Congress wants them to do. That's not what's happening here. From day one, the House, particularly the House Intelligence Committee, has been hopelessly partisan. You saw that fight about releasing different reports about how the House Intelligence Committee viewed Russian involvement in the campaign. Republicans said one thing, the Democrats said another. What's happening here, I think, is that clearly Republicans in the House who are affiliated with the president are saying, we want to expose more of this investigation in an effort to undermine it. And meanwhile, an informant who I guarantee you was told by the FBI that his identity would be kept confidential, his professional life is now damaged. And if I were the FBI, I would feel compelled to provide him personal security because I'm sure he's getting a raft of hate mail now that he's been identified.
Shell Rock, Iowa is our first stop. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. I was very, very surprised that the FBI and the Department of Justice met with Trump and seemed to be cooperating. Could it be possible that they're doing this because the light of day will indeed shed some light on culpability within the Trump campaign?
Good question. Competing interests perhaps at stake. I guess, Matt Zapatosky, I'll start with you and go to Philip Mudd.
Well, I think they met with the president because the president is their boss and he asked them to come over and meet. Now, it seems to me they're playing a little bit of a bureaucratic game. So they don't want to turn over documents about this informant like Devin Nunes wants them to. But they have been willing to brief Devin Nunes on some information apparently about this informant. And that's sort of all they agreed to after this meeting yesterday. Now, we'll just have to wait and see. There's going to be a follow-on meeting that John Kelly is going to spearhead. We'll have to see if they're able to turn over information that's enough to satisfy Devin Nunes and the president, but also kind of maintain their interest in protecting this ongoing criminal investigation.
Philip Mudd?
I think that's dead on. I think if you go inside this nasty city of Washington, D.C., what's happened here is the FBI and the Department of Justice, the Director of National Intelligence, don't want to do this. But to avoid an uglier fight, they've said, let's do this under the sort of guidance, if you will, of Kelly in the White House. I think what they're anticipating is that Kelly will be the adult in the room and he will take the heat for telling Devin Nunes, that's the head of the Intelligence Committee in the Congress, hey, you can't have these documents. You got your briefing. It's time to be quiet.
Sophia's next. She's calling from Bangor, Maine. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. You asked at the top of the show about whether we're in a constitutional crisis or heading for one. I think we're in a slow-rolling constitutional crisis right now, and every little incremental step that Trump takes to break the norms of this country is taking us one step further into a real severely detrimental constitutional crisis in this country. I am 66 years old. I have never seen in my political watching, which I've watched all my life, any presidential campaign have anything to do with a foreign government. And here we have 73 known contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia. I do not understand how people can rationalize that away. If there was an informant placed by the FBI to find out what was going on. I feel it was to protect America from something very nefarious, which is Trump working with Putin to control the election as best as possible, to get elected, to work with autocratic people around the world like Erdogan and Duterte and Putin, and now Trump wants to be there right in the mix. And I am very terrified for my country because no Republicans will stand up to him. They are in cahoots with him. Nixon, he makes Nixon look like an angel, and at least the Republicans back then stood up to Nixon. I don't think that's ever going to happen here because I think they're all bought and paid for through the NRA and Russia. There is so, it goes so deep. I'm very scared about it.
You know, Sophia, at the same time, there are people on the other side of the partisan divide who say, uh-uh, what's going on now is actually an investigative agency of the federal government being used as a tool to overturn the results of an election. When you hear that, what's your reaction?
Informants were placed in there was because the Trump campaign had contacts through Carter Page, who had been watched since 2013 or 2011, something like that, through George Papadopoulos and his loudmouth in the bar. I mean, what would that say to an FBI agent to say, oh my gosh, there are things happening here that we should investigate? And they didn't put a spy in. They didn't put an embedded person in. They had somebody that they knew that knew those people go talk to them. I don't find that really scary. What the scary thing is Trump and his incremental pushing. And pretty soon, Rosenstein will crack. Mueller will get fired. It'll all go down the drain. And what happens to us then? That's my question. What happens to America then? We are in a slow-rolling constitutional crisis.
Professor Finkelstein, what do you make of Sophia's call from Bangor?
I think, to begin with, she's right that there's a very serious rule of law problem here. And I think that Rosenstein did not take the right approach in this instance. He could have said, with regard to the sharing of documents, exactly what was discussed, namely, I do not share documents. It is Justice Department policy not to share documents on an ongoing investigation. And in this particular instance, he should have waited after Donald Trump tweeted on Sunday that he was going to officially demand an investigation. He should have just waited. And like General Mattis, who showed a little bit more spine when Donald Trump tweeted that he wanted to ban transgender people from the military, he said, hey, a tweet is not an official order, and I'll wait to get my order. And that order never came. So it might have been that standing up to Trump, number one, by saying the Justice Department, as he said recently, is not going to be exploited, and whether or not we launch an investigation is up to us, and there's a tradition of independence here. And number two, he might have just waited it out a little bit, because I think that the president's lawyers might have been saying to him, hey, you don't want to order this investigation because you might be in obstruction of justice territory.
For his own part, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein defended the Department of Justice earlier this month, pushing back on criticisms from House Republicans and threats of impeachment.
The Department of Justice is not going to be extorted. We're going to do what's required by the rule of law, and any kind of threats that anybody makes are not going to affect the way we do our job.
In many people's eyes, Rod Rosenstein is the thin gray pinstripe line standing between Trump being able to unravel the entire investigative structure by being hanging tough and keeping on. Philip Mudd, he's kind of caught in the middle, isn't he?
He is. He's not the only line, though. When you look at the way Washington works, if he were to go, that would raise questions about whether the attorney general would have to go. That would raise questions for any Senate committee considering his successor, that is Rosenstein's successor, about whether they would ever confirm anybody who didn't commit in public that the investigation would continue. So I view this, all this mess, as sort of like a more complicated version of what happened when the president replaced James Comey. It got more complicated complicated and that it got uglier. It might seem simple to just let Rosenstein go. I think that would lead to a sort of domino effect that would make, in some ways, the investigation more devastating and difficult for the president.
Claire Finkelstein, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the caller raised another important point, which is the evidence of foreign governments interfering here. And what's really important is that on Saturday, we learned that there was a second Trump meeting, Trump Tower meeting involving Saudi Arabia and UAE. And I wonder whether or not this tweet on Sunday wasn't an ace up the president's sleeve that he knew would distract everyone from that information, and how long he had actually been aware of the fact that there had been an FBI contact interviewing Carter Page, George Stephanopoulos, and others.
So
Papadopoulos, excuse me.
This is part of the public effort to sway the view of what's going on?
Well, it's a frequently used tactic by the president and his administration, which is to distract people from what's going on. So instead of talking about that second Trump Tower meeting with the Saudis and UAE, we're all talking about whether or not there was an improper FBI plant in the president's campaign.
We're discussing President Trump's demand that the Department of Justice look into allegations that the FBI infiltrated and surveilled his campaign for political purposes. You can join the conversation. Is the Justice Department capitulating to President Trump's whims or placating him to buy more time? I'm Ray Suarez, and this is On Point.
There's nothing like a movie theater on a hot day, and there's nothing like a good show you can binge watch with a cold glass of lemonade. Summer is the perfect time to find your next favorite thing, and Pop Culture Happy Hour is here to help. Find us on the NPR One app or wherever you get podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're talking about the big legal and ethical issues raised by President Trump's demand that the Department of Justice and FBI look into allegations of spying on his campaign. You can join the conversation. Is Trump using the justice system to punish his enemies or deflect attention from the Russia investigation? I'm talking with Washington Post national security and justice reporter Matt Zapatosky, law professor Claire Finkelstein, and former top FBI official Philip Mudd. Speaking to Fox News yesterday afternoon, Arizona Republican Congressman Andy Biggs called President Trump a victim and says he has a right to ask questions about the FBI's independence.
He has to be careful, but we have to remember that these agencies are within the executive branch. He is the head. All things in the executive branch run through him. He needs to make sure that they're running independent. But if we're going to go to inspector general, or we should do maybe a second special counsel, that moves to independence, and that's what needs to happen. Of course, he can't get in there and tell them how to conduct their investigation. But he now has become a victim, and he has a chance, he has a right to come to these guys and say, look, I was victimized, it looks like. You need to find that out.
Boston's next. Peter, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, hey, listen, full disclosure, I voted for Trump. I just could not vote for Hillary. My first choice would have been Jim Webb. That being said, the Mueller, I think Bob Mueller is an absolute honorable guy, and he's going to do the right thing to follow the investigation. That being said, we're into a year, and there really there has been no collusion found as of this date. I just get so overwhelmed at the Boston area listening to it's such a Democratic whine that Trump won. So you've got a situation, you know, one of your previous calls, what do we do? Well, 2018, you have midterms. Is it going to be a surprise that Democrats are going to vote for who they're going to vote for in 2020? If you don't like Trump, that's what our system's about. You vote him out. However, I do think it's appropriate that I think Trump's raised some legitimate concerns about what's happened to his campaign. And I think the very least that in-house, a person they've appointed the Justice Department to look into it, I think it's absolutely a valid consideration that it should be looked into. But it's what our democracy is about. You don't like it, too bad. We're doing elections 2018. They're talking about the Democrats are sweeping in. Well, let's see what happens.
So Peter, if I understand you, you're saying let the voters take care of this. The extensive contacts with Russian operatives, people close to the Kremlin during the campaign season. That, interesting but not definitive. Let the voters decide.
Well, at the same time, you've got Mueller doing an investigation. There is no, at this stage, that I'm unaware of, they found any direct collusion between Trump. I mean, he's doing an investigation. At some point in time, that should be concluded, and Mueller's going to give his recommendations or whatever he decides to do. I just think that that's following. Everything's in place. I think Trump's got some legitimate complaints about what's happening, and they're going to do an in-house investigation. And the final thing is I absolutely, with Trump and one of the previous callers mentioned about General Mattis, who I think is a fantastic defense, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, excuse me. But some of us, the veterans, we're so politically correct with Obama and his Secretary of Defense, of like all they were concerned of like being PC, of like gays and transgender. They threw out all the military studies about unit cohesion.
Okay, we're getting a little far afield now, Peter, but thanks a lot for your call and thanks a lot for your point. Let me put that to Philip Mudd, that the investigation's underway and perhaps the president has some reason to suspect that not everything was on the up and up.
Isn't that why Congress is conducting its own oversight of this already, and why we've had congressional leaders, particularly the Senate committee, which I think has been a lot more mature than the Democratic committee, talk to a bunch of people about what's going on here? I mean, I got a couple of comments here. Number one is, I was investigated by the IRS a few years ago, to have been as a subject of the investigation in a place to say, sorry, I think this is politically motivated, so I get to choose as an American citizen what you get to do. I don't understand why the president gets to decide whether or not it's appropriate for an investigation to continue. I thought we were all created equal under the law. I would also say that this comment about no collusion, we've had a lot of indictments. Those indictments include Russians and American citizens. The American citizens are financial crimes and lying to federal officers, which is a federal crime. There's never been a briefing by the special counsel. We're not going to know what he's found in addition to what he's already charged until he speaks. So I don't know whether there's collusion or not. I do know we have intent to meet foreign officials shown repeatedly by the Trump campaign. And if they took something of value, that's illegal.
Matt Zapatosky, one of the frequent complaints you hear from Trump supporters and from the president himself is that the investigation on the part of the Mueller team has now strayed very far from its original purpose. Is Robert Mueller operating under a broad or narrow mandate?
Well, he does have a broad mandate in the sense that he's allowed to investigate any matters that might arise from his core mission of Russia and coordination with the Trump campaign to influence the election. And you can see he sort of swept in some of Paul Manafort's business dealings in Ukraine long before the campaign and the election. But look, Paul Manafort was his campaign chairman. It would be natural to be looking at his conduct and this conduct in Ukraine, even though it predated the campaign, the Russia investigation. It had to do with a pro-Russia political party in Ukraine. I think now that we're a year in, you're starting to see some signs of Mueller fatigue, even though a majority of Americans still support what Mueller is doing, want to see his investigation continue. Polls have shown that support has slipped, and some of that is just a factor of time, I think, and some of that is a factor of the president just relentlessly attacking Bob Mueller. I think he wants to wrap up the investigation quickly and he wants to stay focused on that original mandate, but he's a prosecutor. I mean, he can't overlook other wrongdoing if he sees other wrongdoing.
Ah, other wrongdoing. Claire Finkelstein, that is part of the public's disgruntlement for people who support the president and want him to emerge from this safe and unscathed. Is an investigator obliged to continue his work into unanticipated realms if he sees other possible evidence of lawbreaking?
One of the problems is that the president, in his desperate efforts to end this investigation, keeps obstructing justice. And then, since Robert Mueller is empowered to investigate obstruction of justice, he keeps having more things to investigate. So if the president wants the investigation to end quickly, he would do better to stand back and try not to interfere so that Mueller doesn't keep having to have new things to investigate. However, Mueller has been careful and, in fact, sent to the New York Attorney General issues that had to do with Stormy Daniels and things that appear to be beyond his scope. So I think he's being cautious and appropriate.
Is it an open question whether the next New York State Attorney General will take up what was on Schneiderman's desk when he departed unexpectedly from that job?
I think it's not an open question. There's no doubt that that issue will be taken up at the New York State level.
Claire Finkelstein from the University of Pennsylvania, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Philip Mudd, a former top CIA and FBI official, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Matt Zapatosky from The Washington Post. Good to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Ray.
In a moment, we'll look at how Europe is responding to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's big speech on Iran yesterday. This is On Point. The new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, delivered his first major foreign policy address yesterday, strongly criticizing Iran and its behavior on the world stage. Joining me now with reaction from Europe is David Hersenzorn, chief Brussels correspondent for Politico Europe. David, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Ray.
Well, along with this litany of wrongdoing on the part of the Iranians over time, didn't Mike Pompeo hold out the possibility that there may be some way for the United States to rejoin the JCPOA, the agreement reached with the P5 plus one that was hoping to curtail Iran's nuclear program?
You know, I don't think so. The idea of renegotiating has obviously been out there for some time. And from the European side, it's fairly clear that there was no real interest in Washington in renegotiating the JCPOA as it exists, but rather the desire was, as Donald Trump has attempted to do, tear it up, pull out unilaterally, hoping to destroy the existing agreement, and then renegotiate another deal, essentially starting from scratch. You heard Boris Johnson, the foreign minister of the UK, immediately saying, even before Pompeo had spoken, even that's extremely unrealistic. That's just not likely to happen.
So is this Pompeo address better understood as a reiteration of the American position or looking for some wiggle room to continue doing business with Europe in its efforts to constrain Iran?
Well, if it was intended as creating wiggle room, I don't think it will succeed. There have been very clear responses on the European side. I mean, quite forceful in saying they are not on board with the dismantling of the JCPOA, that they are going to do everything they can to shield European businesses from continuing to do business and deals with Iran to preserve the agreement as it was endorsed by the UN Security Council. And beyond that, to even deepen, in some cases, the ties between Europe and Iran, to increase and provide new inducements that would continue Iran's compliance, which, you know, international monitors say has been substantially intact all this time.
But Secretary Pompeo seemed to make it clear in his talk yesterday that the United States was going to use all the tools at its disposal to punish European interests if they went ahead and tried to do that.
It's going to be very interesting to see how far they're willing to go and if, in fact, they're able to do that. In many cases, the experts tell us that these sanctions require cooperation. They essentially require a lot of voluntary action on the part of private sector entities. So it's not clear how far the U.S. will be able to go in punishing European businesses. We know that many of these businesses are multinationals. They have a lot more business in the U.S. Of course, they're very concerned about the fallout of essentially this dispute, but all the energy and effort that might go into punishing European businesses. I mean, think about the opportunity cost there. And this is a big question for the Trump administration. You know, what is the ultimate goal? It's created a very risky situation where the U.S. really is out on its own, where some of its best friends, allies, and partners are saying, hey, this is not the way to do this. It was tough enough to get Iran to give up its nuclear weapons program to allow the access for inspectors that we've seen. And now you want to go out and on your own, you think you're just going to rewrite this deal overnight. It doesn't happen that way. So it will be very interesting to see, you know, if this gambit pays off for Washington or if in the end it finds itself quite isolated. Donald Tusk, the president of the European Council, said last week, you know, the problem is not when your enemies, your adversaries, your partners are unpredictable. The problem is when your best friends, when there's unpredictability within the family. And that was a very heartfelt sort of, it was a rebuke of the Trump administration, but it was also a plea saying, hey, come on there. We need some predictability on the European side if we're going to continue to work together on some of these tough challenges.
One of the most interesting aspects of the Pompeo address was what sounded like an appeal to the Iranian people. To use what levers they have to force their leaders to behave in a different way. But I wondered, as I heard that part of the address, whether Pompeo was being totally eyes open about who he was talking to. Do Iranian rank-and-file citizens have that kind of influence on their own government?
Well, not only is that a question of the influence of rank-and-file citizens. I mean, in the end, obviously, the public drives public policy everywhere in the world. But let's get real. I mean, imagine if President Rouhani of Iran came out and called on the American people or the American Congress to impeach Donald Trump, to overthrow Donald Trump. Look, he's colluded with Russia, whatever you want to say. I mean, it would be laughable. What, you know, this is a level of what is seen elsewhere in the world of American arrogance, telling other people, other voters, other governments how to behave and how to act in a way that doesn't go over well, even with some of America's closest partners.
But then you're always left wondering. Pompeo's a sophisticated guy. He's a worldly guy. He understands the way the operations of influence and push and pull work. Was that just a token statement of an outcome that he knew would never happen? Or is there a real misunderstanding in the top circles of American leadership about how Iran works?
One might say there's a real understanding in the American leadership of how Iran works. We could say the same thing is true about Russia, where Putin's continued popularity and leadership certainly vexes Washington. I mean, I think we in journalism have to be very clear about the real politic that's being played here. I mean, this was a decision by the Trump administration to side with two allies, Israel and Saudi Arabia. In fact, against other allies, those being Germany, the United Kingdom, the EU, France, and saying we're going to take our bet that this group of allies has got the right idea, the right plan, the right view going in forward in the Middle East. Now, there will be a cost there when you're taking a side between a regional dispute between Iran and Saudi Arabia. You better hope that you're right. It's a very unpredictable region, not an area where the U.S. has had extraordinary amounts of foreign policy success over decades. So, yes, Pompeo is a sophisticated guy. Let's see how sophisticated and if this proves to be, you know, a good gamble on the part of the Trump administration.
Quickly, before we go, has there been a new reaction to the Pompeo address from those same European allies?
Again, what we heard from Boris Johnson, the foreign minister, was, you know, you have to be realistic about how long it took to negotiate this original deal. You know, the other aspect that there has to be some realism about is that it was endorsed by the UN Security Council, that Barack Obama didn't sign this personally. You know, this was the United States putting its imprimatur on an agreement that the best experts in Washington thought was making the world a safer place. So the general reaction, I think, and there hasn't been a lot of out loud reaction to Pompeo, has been the same as it's been since Trump made his decision, which is this is a mistake. Europe is going to stick with the Iran nuclear accord.
That's David Herzensohn, chief Brussels correspondent for Politico Europe. Thanks so much for joining us.
Coming up
tomorrow, the U.S. birth rate dips to a 30-year low. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.